Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
And I'm Dean Beck. The Apprentice has got the night off, and we're talking about drugs, and we're going to expand that conversation a little further. I'm joined now by Nadia Gavin. She is the Harm Reduction Peer Educator and Young Drug Users Project Officer for Harm Reduction Victoria. Nadia, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
No worries. Thanks for having me in.
You heard a little bit of what Mr. X had to say. We've had a wonderful message come through from Michael, actually, who says it was a meaningful interview. It is easy to dismiss advice about sex helpful drugs, and when someone who has taken the rough road tells us how things may turn out, they have to be believed. Michael, thank you very much for that. Nadia, you play in this space, I guess, as a harm reduction person all the time.
Yeah, I've been working in sort of harm reduction and drug and alcohol for about 12 years. But I guess my interest in it is because I've been an injecting drug user for a long time. And so it's, I guess, about me giving back to my community.
It's difficult for some people to hear that, to hear that, you know, you're comfortable speaking about that. But it's only in us having these conversations that we can get through the stigma associated with it and actually start to ensure that people take the right actions for themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, society has this portrayal of, you know, someone who injects drugs as, you know, someone down and out, no job.
Can't function,
but I can tell you now that a majority of injecting drug users are people that are very highly functioning, have jobs, have mortgages, you know, are active members in the community. But I think because of the stigma and discrimination associated with injecting drug use, people don't want to out themselves. And that's where the harm, you know, happens.
Because it's in that space of secrecy that people either self-educate or get taught the wrong thing.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of what we do is about, you know, debunking the myths out there, especially because, as you said, people get the information from, you know, the people that they use their drugs with. And if the information they're getting is wrong, you know, that's extremely harmful. So, yeah. We spend a lot of time doing that.
Nadia, tell us a bit about the work of Harm Reduction Victoria. They've had a checkered history in the sense that a lot of people think that, you know, even having this conversation is glorifying it.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And I think it's not about glorifying it at all. It's about the fact that people are doing it. And so, as you're saying, we have to have these conversations. We don't condemn drugs. We don't condone drugs. We just know that people are going to use drugs. And so we're about minimising the risks and harms associated whilst they are using drugs.
There are a number of needle exchanges throughout throughout Melbourne. And I guess the Needle Exchange program has been one of Australia's real success stories.
Oh, absolutely. I'll take you back down history lane for a second. We're very lucky at the time in the mid-80s as, you know, the HIV epidemic was, you know, at our doorsteps. Bob Hawke, our Prime Minister at the time, his daughter was a heroin injector, and so there was that. He was affected personally by it. So they decided to implement needle and syringe programs, not have meeting after meeting, which sort of seems to happen these days. So they just implemented it, and we managed to avert the epidemic within the injecting drug using community.
Yeah, we had a pretty amazing health minister at the time too, in Neil Blewett, who really wore that on his shoulders and was howled down from, you know, all over the world.
Yep.
He turns out he was right. And yep. thank God he did what he did.
Yep.
HIV has managed to basically stay out of the injecting drug use culture because of that very fact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One, you know, I guess the slogan of the time was one fit, every hit. Just making sure people had access to equipment did change things, yeah, tremendously, yeah.
It was traditionally, I guess, associated directly with heroin use. Mm. Injecting drug use was traditionally associated with that. And, you know, we went through a period of some pretty intense overdoses in this country. There was... I'm trying to get the exact time, but I'm thinking late 80s.
And most specifically, I mean, they were still happening, but the late 90s were when...
Was it the late 90s?
When they had the road toll and the death toll
That's
in
right.
the Sun Herald.
That's
yeah.
what I was thinking yeah. of. Yeah, it was a decade out.
Yeah.
So that then disappeared, partly because heroin was hard to come by and partly because there was a new baby on the block.
Yeah, yeah. Look, you know, people change their drugs. And I think, you know, as a user organisation that has been around for 25 years to, you know, be current, we've had to change with the times and broaden our focus. And so now we not only focus on, you know, heroin, methamphetamines, you know, all the other drugs that can be injected. But, you know, we have a bit of a strong focus on party drugs as well, which I know they don't like to use the term party drugs, but people generally use them to party, so I'm using it tonight.
I'm going to let you. Now, we'd love you to contribute to the conversation. If you've got a question for Nadia from Harm Reduction Victoria, please get in contact with us, or perhaps you'd like to share one of your stories. I'm happy for you to do it anonymously. This is how you get in contact with us.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 JOY949. Email on air at joy.org.au. Or call us 1-300-JOY-949.
Joy 94.9.
Hello, this is the fabulous Adam Richard. Dean Beck and Andrew the Apprentice say I have to do everything they tell me to. So please listen to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 like I have to. No, not the candle wax again!
The Apprentice has the night off, but you are with Dean Beck, and my special guest is Nadia Gavin. She is from Harm Reduction Victoria. Nadia, we were speaking just prior to the break about the, I guess, influx of crystal meth. It has absorbed the gay community around the world, actually. Mm. It has gravitated very nicely. It's synergistically latched onto the gay community.
Yeah.
Many areas put it suggest that it's, you know, been the death of the gay scene in certain parts. But it has certainly taken a lot of lives with it. And done things like a lot of HIV seroconversions and hepatitis C seroconversions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us what you're seeing.
Look. I guess what I'd like to say is it's unfortunate that I guess at the beginning it wasn't identified, because I guess things could have been put in place, education could have been done, you know, people could have come up with strategies, it could have been out there. So I guess people aren't seeing the harm, you know, that you're seeing.
It's a bit of a worry though when our organisations empowered to educate us with our health messages are affected by the social stigma of drugs. And that's what's happened. They haven't wanted to touch the issue because they haven't been wanting to address the issue that is stigmatised throughout society.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, we know that injecting drug users are, you know, some of the most stigmatised people in the world. AVA, which is our sort of national peak body, so I guess the AVAO to VAC,
yep.
know. And so they did some research at the end of the year before last, finding out what people's ideas were, you know, what people's views were around stigma and discrimination. And I know I'm sort of getting off track a bit, but I think I've got to go there first to have this conversation. And basically, that most of society believed that stigmatising and discriminating drug users played a positive role in not encouraging people to take it up. And some of the biggest people to stigmatise injecting drug users were people in the healthcare industry. And they felt that they had the right to stigmatise people because society backed them up. So
that could not be more fucked in the head. If I saw it on paper, I wouldn't believe it.
No, absolutely. So, you know, AVIL is working really tirelessly to get together, you know. They actually put together a film called Afternoons with Max Marshall, and they really listened to the company that helped make it in going softly, because they were told basically if you try to do anything more than softly, you'd be met with brick walls. So it's...
But surely this is the thing that I find the most frustrating. Governments spend millions of dollars cleaning up the aftermath, right? Whether that be HIV, hepatitis C, whatever, plus the damaged lives and the kids that are bashed and whatever, right? We spend millions of dollars on that, but we're not prepared to spend a few hundred thousand on the core issue, which is some honest, in-your-face, clear information that might be a little bit confronting for some people, but tells the bloody truth.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're a very small organisation. There's about eight of us, and we're a statewide organisation. So, you know, we do what we can with what we get. But, you know, I think, you know, it is hard when, you know, a lot of money is being spent. And I guess, you know, NSPs are, I guess, the real sort of...
For our listeners, we should say what that is.
Sorry, needle and syringe programs are our success story, because they say with every dollar spent on needle and syringe programs, there's a $4 return. So...
How amazing and how clear could that be?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think, you know, a lot is spent on policing and customs, which I understand that does have to be spent there. But I think, you know, they need to give a bit more to harm reduction.
And they need to get over the bullshit. I mean, and it's their own bullshit they need to get over. They need to get over the fact that, you know, if producing a video on how to inject yourself is going to mean people do it properly, then governments have to accept that, sign off on it, and produce the bloody thing.
Yep.
Not shy away from it and push it underground and almost into oblivion to the point that it can't be accessed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It
should be on YouTube.
You know, and my personal opinion is that we need to educate kids. We need to go to high schools. And, I mean, I understand they're really risk-averse places, but, you know, people need to have the information even before, you know, they may never, ever go there, but if they have that information, they can then make informed choices that will hopefully lead them to, you know, less risks and harms if they are going to.
And more's the point that if they are doing it, they need to know where to access this information. So it might be a brochure at a high school saying if you're going to do this, check this website out, right? It might be as simple as that.
Yep.
But as a gay man in this town, I know because I work with Living Positive and you know with you guys, but most gay men in this town would not know where to go to find information on how to inject correctly.
And I mean, and
because we don't tell them.
Yeah, and I think you know that's really sad because we live in the day and age of technology, and I know with our website, www.hrvic.org.au, we have links to other organisations, so it would be great, I guess, if other organisations had links to us. So
absolutely. Yeah. And we are working on that as we speak. Nadia Gavin is my guest. She is a peer educator with Harm Reduction Victoria, and you're also in charge of the youth project offices. Tell us a little bit about, I guess, what you're seeing emerging, because it's an ever-changing thing, with today's youth?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, you're right, sort of heroin is a bit of an ageing cohort and, you know, it decreases, I think, you
know. It's so 1990s.
I know, yeah. So passé.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, look, it's really difficult to get access to young people. The services that we work with, they say that their young people are only drinking and smoking pot. But I do believe that, you know, young people don't see what they do as an issue, so they're not going to be talking about it. So, yeah, look, I think, you know, I know you're asking me what's sort of happening at the moment, but it's hard to sort of get, you know, a finger on it because, you know, young people, they move, they groove, they do, you know, they travel, they, everything's, you know, happens opportunistically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that, you know, they might be using multiple things, but they may not see that there's a problem or they even have a problem, actually. Yeah.
We will explore more of this subject right after this break, but we would love to hear from you if you've got any thoughts you'd like to share or perhaps a story of your own you'd like to share with us. This is How You Do It.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair at joy.org.au or call us 1300 JOY 949.
Joy 94.9.
This is Nate Valvo.
Hi, Catherine Evany here.
This is the fabulous Adam Richard.
Hey guys, this is Matt Mitchum.
I'm Jason Ball.
This is Joy Wallison.
Like, I learned more things from hide and seek, for God's sake. School didn't provide it.
Not something that I listen to on a regular basis.
You certainly want something a bit more reliable, and whether hide and seek is the first place you should start.
Oh, wonderful.
You are listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 with me, Dean Beck, and the apprentice is, I imagine, enjoying his night off. Now, my guest is Nadia Gavin. She is a harm reduction peer educator with Harm Reduction Victoria. And we've spoken a little bit about crystal meth use amongst the community. What is emerging is a whole new family of drugs that, to my knowledge, there's never really been anything like it other than, say, LSD as a sort of synthetic man-made manufactured item. Yeah. But all of these powders and potions and sprays and things that we really don't know what they do or what they are.
Yeah, look, I mean, we are, I guess, you know, maybe people got bored with what was on offer. So, you know, yes, powders and potions, research chemicals, various different, yeah, liquids, GHB, you know, stuff like that. People are, I guess, moving into different things that I guess, you know, the other drugs, we had lots of information, research. But, I mean, like I sometimes help out with DanceWise, which is one of our projects.
A great project, actually.
Yeah. And they go out to dance festivals, doofs, and they provide education information. They have a...
They also do spotting.
Yeah, and they have chill-out space.
And they were used a couple of years back during the Pride March. And I was... when also was... working with them and the Take Care Out There project. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, look, the crew from your organisation were fantastic because they were there to see people dropping before anyone else saw it. They know what to look for.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not going to even begin to sort of say I have anywhere near the knowledge that those guys do.
And they're young people.
Yeah, they're young people and they're from the community, which is the awesome thing. You know, the project's been around for 15 years and, you know, it's still going strong. And pretty much everyone there, other than the two coordinators, are volunteers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there's... There, from what I'm getting from you is that there is a sense of community in the out drug user, if you like. And I guess that sort of happens a little bit within the gay community with injecting drug use. And I guess, it snowballs, of course. The circles grow.
Yeah.
But that scene is hard to, I guess, tap into from a peer education or a youth education perspective, because where do you find them? Yeah. How do you get in touch with them?
Yeah, and that's where I think, DanceWise has been really successful, because, they're out there in the thick of it.
Yeah.
When people are experiencing hard times. I think, a lot of the volunteers, may have a couple of years before, or maybe even a season before, used DanceWise because they were experiencing a bit of a hard time. And
Their way of giving back?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what do you know about these synthetic drugs? Because I've heard some pretty horrendous stories.
Yeah. As I said, I don't know as much as these guys. We have our specific projects, and, one of my colleagues, Jane, and I, we do help out. So we do get to see some of it. But I would not say that I'm an expert on that. So, but I think it's definitely worth maybe getting, Dan and Sass on to maybe have a conversation about...
Let's do that. Book it in.
About those things. Absolutely.
You've got some information regarding meth use and I guess the harm reduction way of dealing with it or using it. Can you take us through some of that information?
Okay, so there's various different styles of information, I guess. Jane, our dope worker, drug overdose prevention education worker, she will talk about overdose recognition response when it comes to, say, stimulants or what they call... amphetamine-type substances.
Yeah, yep, that family.
ATS. So she'll go through recognition, response, prevention. Myself, I talk about safer injecting specifically. So I do workshops with users in the community. And Jane and I like to make sure we're responsive to the groups, because sometimes you might have a group that is... majority heroin users. Sometimes you might have a group that is specifically, into amphetamine-type substances. So we like to make sure that what we do is going to be interesting to the people that we're educating. So if you want to talk about, harm reduction when it comes to methamphetamines, and I hear Jane saying this all the time, people need to eat, sleep and drink water. And, people that say that they may have been up for, 4 or 5 days, that's not actually physically possible. They have actually had micro sort of sleeps during that period of time. But I think the interesting thing is even if you're up for, say, 48 hours without any drugs, you already start exhibiting symptoms of, mental health illnesses. So, paranoia, stuff like that. So then you add a drug to that.
And lowered sugar levels, and dehydration.
Yep.
And, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No wonder you're starting to go a bit loopy in the head.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm like that at the best of times. I want to go through a couple of... we touched on the hepatitis C issue earlier, particularly with the injecting drug use.
Yeah.
But I want to do some comparisons for our listeners who might want to work out how this sits in compared to HIV. Last year in 2011, there were 1,137 new diagnoses of HIV, and that compares to 10,261 new cases of hepatitis C.
Yep.
That's like 10 times more.
Absolutely.
Now, we know that roughly 25 to 30% of HIV cases remain undiagnosed within the community.
Yeah.
And we're hoping that rapid testing will help flush some of that out.
Yeah.
But the thing with HIV is if you are relatively aware of your general health and well-being, you get a bloody good wake-up call when you get sick. in your seroconversion illness. It's yep. sort of some people don't get it as intense as others, but yep. a lot of people get an illness that says something's not right here
yep.
in my body. Yep. That's not the case with hepatitis C.
No, it's not. You know, some people do get sick, mm-hmm. but majority of people, they won't even know that they've got it until 10 to 15 years later when they start showing symptoms. So,
which is way down the track.
Absolutely.
And who knows who else they've passed it on to during that 10 years?
Absolutely. So, you know, we really encourage people to go get testing. And, I mean, you know, even that, there's different types of tests. One of them, the antibody test, only tells you whether you've come into contact with the virus. Doesn't actually tell you whether you have it. And then there's something called a PCR test, a polymer chain reaction test, and that tells you whether you actually have the virus. Can tell you what genotype you have and what your viral load is. But that test is more expensive. So Medicare will only pay for that, you know, once a year. So,
but a cheaper option is a liver function test.
Look,
which is how it's been discovered amongst HIV people.
Yeah, yeah. And that's because, they have elevated liver function tests and they go, oh, well.
What's going on here?
What's going on here? And, you know, unfortunately, co-infection makes the disease progress a lot quicker. Yeah, but, I mean, I think still with injecting drug users, we do generally say go to a drug user-friendly doctor who knows about Hep C and knows about the different testing and, we suggest that they get an antibody test first. And, you know, with HIV, pre- and post-test counselling sort of mandatory. It's not with Hep C. So some people may just find out that, you know, the doctor gave them a test, they didn't say what it was, and that they now have Hep C with no educational information.
Really?
Yeah.
That happens?
Yeah. It's best practice, but, it's not done.
Here in Victoria, there's roughly 6,000 people living with HIV, and there's roughly 65, again, more than 10 times, 65,000 people living with hepatitis C. Interestingly, of those 6,000 people living with HIV, about 13% of them also have hepatitis C.
Yeah, so it's obvious that, you know, it's not being, you know, picked up. They're not getting educated before, you know, they find out about the disease. And I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, they don't know what it is until they find out they have it.
Each year in Australia, roughly 100 people die of a AIDS-defining illness subsequent to contracting HIV. 2,550 people pass away from liver disease thanks to hepatitis C.
Yeah, no, it's very quickly becoming one of the, you know, biggest killers, liver disease. So, yeah, it's sad.
It sure is. And if, of course, you are HIV positive and on HIV meds, you need a healthy liver to process those medications.
Absolutely. And in other countries, people with co-infections don't have the luxury of having access to anything other than first-line antiretroviral medication. And you know, that can be pretty toxic to the liver as well, so that will kill them pretty quickly. So testing is very important.
Sure is. Nadia Gavin is my guest. You are listening to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Don't stop, no, I'll never give up, and I'll never look back. Just hold your head up, and if it gets rough, it's time to get up. They keep saying, don't stop, no, it's ever enough. I'll never look back, never give up, and if it gets rough, it's time to get rough. Oh, but now I'm falling. Don't stop, no, I'll never give up, and I'll never look back. Just hold your head up, and if it gets rough, it's time to get up. They keep saying, don't stop, no one's ever enough. I'll never look back, never give up. And if it gets rough, it's time to get rough. Oh, but now I'm falling. Dean Beck with you on Hide and Seek as the apprentice enjoys his night off. And I want to say thank you to you, Nadia, for being so wonderful in talking about this subject, because it's a subject that I have wanted to get on the air for quite some time. And for no other reason, it's not easy to find people like yourself that are willing to talk about it.
No, for sure.
Now, last night, as part of Living Positive Victoria's Masterclass series, they had a party and play seminar, which had a number of presenters that spoke about their drug taking. I had the great pleasure of hosting it, and Gary Sattell from Hepatitis Victoria gave a demonstration on correct protocols for injecting drug use, how to do it, I guess, from a hygiene and procedural perspective. These sorts of demonstrations are few and far between, and I would encourage anyone listening who gets the opportunity to go along to another one to find out some more. I'm sure you would agree.
Absolutely. I mean, that's my job, basically, is making sure that people who inject are doing it correctly. A lot of what I do as well is working with staff who work with injecting drug users and taking them through the process and giving them equipment and, you know, basically seeing what it's all about so they can actually see where risks and harm sort of occur when people are injecting. And some people have worked in the drug and alcohol sector for a long time and never have known what the actual process or what you need to inject is.
And there are a number of implements and instruments, all of which have a purpose and a use and should be purposefully used.
Yep, and disposed of correctly as
and
well.
And disposed of correctly as well.
Yep.
Now, we've had a message come in on 0427JOY949 that says, of the 6,000 people who are HIV positive here in the state of Victoria, how many got it from injecting drugs? I'm going to put that as a, I'm presuming it's a statement rather than a question, mm-hmm. in the sense that we know that HIV, in this country at least, has not been spread by injecting drug users.
No, not at all. I mean, yes, it drives it in other countries.
And injecting drugs will drive sexual behaviours that could potentially, and if that's what the person who's posed the question is asking, that's kind of a different story, and it's what we've been talking about tonight, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I think the injecting drug using community in Australia is very lucky that generally, you know, the figures hovered around 1% of people have gotten HIV through injecting drug use.
Nadia, if people want to find out more information about the right way to go about things and how to reduce the impact of some of these chemicals on their bodies, but they're going to take them anyway, where can they go for more information?
Okay, so they can go to our website, which is www.hrvic.org.au. If they want to know where to find clean and new injecting equipment, AVIL, which I mentioned before, they have a national website with needle and syringe program listings. And so basically you go...
Is that put in your postcode type of thing?
Yeah, put in your postcode and it'll tell you all the places that you can get it in your general area.
And what's their website?
Okay, it's www.aivl.org.au and you look for NSP listings and legal information.
Right.
Yeah.
So aivl.org.au is where you'll find that. Look for NSP, which is Needle and Syringe Program.
Absolutely.
And you'll find more information there. I'm sure there are links from hrvic.org.au's website.
Yep, there definitely is.
And look, it's been wonderful to have you contribute to the program tonight. I really do appreciate it. And look, we need to have this conversation and not be afraid to talk about it, because only then will people make healthy choices. Now, if people are struggling with their drug addiction and want to get a service, where can they go to do that?
There's lots of services. If people don't have access to the internet, they can give us a call and we can refer them to the, you know, best possible service for them. There's I mean, there are lots of services. It depends on, I guess, what you want, whether it is more counselling, whether it's information, whether when it comes to, I guess, heroin, whether they want to go on a pharmacotherapy, which is a maintenance program, mm-hmm. so methadone or suboxone. Unfortunately, with methamphetamines, there's no maintenance treatment. But, yeah, the only thing really is counselling. Turning Point, they offer counselling. But let your fingers do the walking and I'm sure you'll find lots of information.
Nadia, Gavin, thank you so much for joining us on Hide and Seek.
No worries.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.